Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And so I'm going to say two dirty words, Cindy.
Uh-oh.
Words that you don't love.
Oh, God.
Hors d'oeuvres.
I don't know what it... Well, it's because I've done an amuse-bouche or an hors d'oeuvre for years and years.
I always thought that you had a shorter attention span than I did.
I do.
But with food...
There's no doubt.
But with food, I have a shorter attention span than you.
Yeah.
I love one, two bites of something interesting and move on.
Mm-hmm. Well, I do too, but...
What?
I just don't like making hors d'oeuvres. I don't know what... It's probably the only thing I don't really enjoy.
So what is hard about making hors d'oeuvres, or thinking about hors d'oeuvres? Because I love hors d'oeuvres, or... tapas or...
Oh, I love tapas too. Right.
Antipasti.
And antipasta. I love all those things. An hors d'oeuvre really is a bite.
But I love preparing.
And I think that's what
it is. I guess
what
I mean is I love
it's
preparing
those things.
It's one
little
bite.
Uh-huh. I don't. It's
so
one little
bite.
So
what in the world would you do when guests come over besides have a large container of caviar and garnishes?
I do revert to what I do, which is I like passing. I love making soup. So that is, and it's an easy hors d'oeuvre because if, you know, I buy little espresso cups and, you know, you always have them. So, you know, and it's, I don't know, I love soup. So it's easy. It can be a cold soup in the summertime. It can be a hot soup in the wintertime. Yeah. And people love it too. And it's easy to, that's the other thing, you know, you're standing up. How are they going to deal with the wine in their hand, the plate, if you've given them a plate? I mean, you say I don't like hors d'oeuvres, and I'm agreeing with you, and I shouldn't. I did an entire party at my house when I first moved in to meet my neighbors, invited all of my neighbors, and I did the entire thing with hors d'oeuvres or tapa, whatever you want to call it, and it was extremely labor-intensive, and, you know, it was... I ended up spending more time in the kitchen than I should have, but then that's the way I lean. See, this is my biggest party problem when I have a party.
Is getting out of the kitchen.
Yeah, I can't keep myself out of the kitchen. Obviously, I love it, but I'm supposed to be out there socializing. And I mean, I have been cooking for a long time, so I tend to be like a back of the house person. While I love to talk with people, certainly, and I love being with my guests, I mean, I guess I just naturally gravitate back to the kitchen, and then I have to kind of make myself go back out front.
You're at least pleasant in the kitchen. For me, because I don't cook as much as I like to at work a lot of times, it ends up being my therapy, and so I'm enjoying it during the course of entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
And then people come and want to talk to
me. And you don't want
me.
To be interrupted.
And I'm
and so, then you get
and
cranky
concentrating
and,
on something. Yes.
And you're yelling at your guests.
Not exactly,
but I know what you mean. I mean, I'm used to working in a kitchen. See, this is the difference for us to entertain in a home because we're restaurant people. And for people that are normally at home, they have a different outlook and yet we have a different perspective and can contribute. But at the same time, I almost wish this was a live show because I'd like to hear how other people think about doing their own parties. We should do a live show on this sometime. But yeah, I think that... Hors d'oeuvres are, you know, if you make, let's say the little elephant ear,
really good planning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the thing with hors d'oeuvres is, and the thing that I know that frustrates you as a chef is because people don't measure your work on that. You know, they don't measure your work on that. They think, well, when it comes to get their main course, when it comes to get the last course or two, or the most luxuriant ingredient, that's what they're going to kind of measure your work on.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the maybe in some ways the opposite thing is what happens to me because I get excited about that first message that you send, whether it's the first wine that someone's being served, the first bite of something that they have, I think that is actually super important. You don't have a shot at impressing them with something else unless you really get them focused with that first thing and you work their appetite up with that first little bite that they have.
I think there are a lot of different things you can do for an hors d'oeuvre. Let's say you're going to make a gross piece of something. And when I say a gross piece, I mean, let's say a pâté, and it's called a gross piece. So if you were to make a pâté in a traditional terrine mold, it would give you the opportunity to make this one big thing that you can then slice, put on toast points, maybe cut the slice on a bias so that way you have triangles. You know, there are a lot of things that you can make this big thing and then turn into 50 portions So that's the route I would go at home.
An incredible cheat for something like that that works really, really well are the little biscuit cutters, all the little different round shapes. You can make your toasts. I mean, this is just quick and dirty. You know, if you want to look like a sophisticated host and you go through the process of making a pate or something and you have that ready to go and to be sliced, you cut the slice the thickness that you want. Use a cutter to cut your toast. Use the next size, a little bit smaller, to cut that pate. And then you only really have to do, you know, garnishes for knife work. You can have all of that ready to go and ready to be assembled and trade up, you know, before. And you warm the toast for one moment, and then you line everything up, garnish it, send it out. And that's pretty easy peasy fancy food.
Well, and the thing is with a pate, it can be very inexpensive ingredients. So you can have this, you know, one thing that's going to do a lot of feeding and doesn't have to be expensive. Or you can make expensive. You can add beautiful ingredients to it. But literally, you can make it from chicken livers, you know, or ground pork, you know, chicken, whatever. And all these things can be very cost effective.
You started to mention something about pastry. And that, I think, is the thing. Number one thing I think that people love when you give them a hot hors d'oeuvre is something crispy and
I agree.
If it manages to be crispy and not fried, they feel somehow better about themselves, but they're also still really happy about it.
Well, puff pastry is such a great, I mean, it's like the greatest tool because you can do a million different things to a piece of puff pastry and make hors d'oeuvres out of it.
You're talking about the one that I would, you know, do for a million years, super easy, make olive tapenade, you know, lay it on the pastry, cut it so it's like a pommier. And that's an easy thing to look up online, how to make a pommier with puff pastry.
Or elephant ear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pommier is not French for elephant ear, by the way.
Right. No.
But it does sort of look like that. Exactly right. But whatever you want to put inside of that, and tapenade is a good thing, or it could be.
And it's a thin layer. So basically, you take a piece of puff pastry, and you might roll it out just a tiny bit. You don't want to bring it down too much or make it too thin. But then you just coat the whole puff pastry with this thin layer of whatever it is. I mean, that could be chicken liver mousse. That could be a force meat. It could be chopped mushrooms. It could be duxelles, which would be finely chopped mushrooms sautéed in butter with a tiny bit of garlic and salt and pepper. Ooh, and just do a thin layer of that. Smoked salmon. You know, a lot of things. You can put a ton of things in there. And then you actually roll one side towards the middle and the other side towards the middle. You pull it together and you refrigerate it or actually freeze it, frankly. And then you slice it once it's firmed up. And then you have these, it can be gorgeous too. You could put chopped spinach in there.
It's something you bake. On parchment paper and in a hot oven, probably a 425 oven or something.
And that's
just
the other
a few minutes. It rises and it's ready to go, and you can hit it with a little bit of a cold sauce as a garnish. And
sure, or oil, flavored oil, walnut oil, or something like that. You know, the nice thing about that is, again, you're producing a lot from one piece. You know, you could probably get 30 portions from one roll of puff pastry. Phyllo dough is another really good thing to use for hors d'oeuvres too, or kataifi dough. You know, a lot of these things are, you know, again, you're talking about crispy, and I agree with that. I mean, I just like crispy food. Somebody asked me, it was National Sandwich Day the other day, and someone asked me what my favorite sandwich is. And you know, I almost never eat sandwiches, and my answer is bruschetta. I mean, that I love crispy. You know, if you're going to take a great piece of bread and either saute it in olive oil or in butter, or you can bake it in the oven with that. I mean, that's the beginning of a good sandwich to me.
Well, the nice thing about those pastries is that it's very easy to handle. Standing somewhere, very easy to handle.
They don't need silverware. That's another thing you consider when you're making your hors d'oeuvres, is it going to require silverware, along with the fact that they're now holding a wine glass?
I think as a rough rule for entertaining, you'd want something to balance. It's funny, it's like menus within menus. You know, you're balancing everything on one dish for the dish to work out, but things have to work in sequence too. If your menu, before you ever sit down, or if this is, say it's a dinner party where you want to serve hors d'oeuvres for 45 minutes or an hour and have people sit down to a meal of three or four courses, you know, or is it a meal where you sit down to one big family-style meal, so you put everything out of the kitchen and then everybody sits and you're done?
Yeah, which is probably the easiest thing to do.
If that's the case, then you stretch out the number of hors d'oeuvres that you might serve.
Right.
If it's the former, where it's a more organized dinner party by courses, maybe two, three things being passed and one thing, you know, maybe one or two things set out are plenty. You could double that for if you're doing the family style dinner, or, you know, big shared dinner party kind of thing. But that's You want to have a plan for that, and don't make, if four things are sort of carbohydrate based, as hors d'oeuvres,
you have to be careful with that.
They're never going to have an appetite when they sit at the table.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you have, you want to have something. I always think you want a seafood, you want a meat, you want a bird, you want a veggie. Whether maybe you're laying out smoked salmon and garnishes, or maybe you're
cured salmon,
or maybe you're laying out a vegetable crudité or something like that. And then the other hors d'oeuvres that are passed, you know, you want a variety between hot and cold. Warmer weather, more cold. Hot weather, more hot. But and usually hot weather just richer in general, but just to be seasonal. But you need to have a little bit of a structure for how you organize your hors d'oeuvres.
I think it's so nice, too, to have sliced meats out because they're not going to suffer. You don't have to worry about the refrigeration if they're out there for an hour, 45 minutes or an hour. You know, finocchiono or the mortadella or prosciutto.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many beautiful meats, and that's just a great way. And people can easily help themselves to that. They can be talking and walking over and making themselves comfortable with that, you know, feeling like, well, I'm ready to have a plate of these things.
I got a good lesson entertaining a couple of years ago, a number of staff from one of the wine shops having like a sort of team rally at my house. And I didn't even, I was making a menu. It ended up being a very meat-centric menu of hors d'oeuvres. And I had two vegans, a pescatarian, and a vegetarian. And we'd always talked about wine. We hadn't really talked about what people ate. I didn't know.
Okay.
And here I am trying to have a pescatarian like, this beef is amazing. Please.
Oops.
You know, well, in the last 25 years I haven't had it, so don't try to give it to me now. You know, that's...
Well, so what did you do? How did you work it out? You had some vegetables, I'm sure you could work with.
I did kind of a lousy job. I mean, honestly.
That's hard when you find out right then and there.
Because my plan wasn't great. I mean, that's the thing that...
Yeah,
the point I'm trying to stress is you want to think about who have you got. And what are they going to expect? And if you're entertaining, you know... a family event, and you have, you know, two grandparents that want very simple food, and you have the two kids home from college and their friends that may have dietary stuff going on.
Sure.
You know,
you just have to think about
the audience.
Right.
But that just even in organizing hors d'oeuvres, you got to have something for everyone. You feel bad if you have something available to 3/4 of your crowd. And the 1/4 that is not being taken care of, I mean, that's the other thing is if you're entertaining 10 people or 50 people, you don't want a couple of people to be having a bad time.
No, of course not. Well, the thing
is
that
it ruins it for everyone. It kind of ruins your goal. I mean, all the other steps that you've taken, you've got to think through in your menu, who is your audience and what are you going to get done for them?
And you don't necessarily know who, if you've said Frank and guest, you don't know who that guest is, so you don't know what their dietary needs may be. So that's right. You know, absolutely, you should consider having vegan food, vegetarian food.
But if your hors d'oeuvres are varied, you're covered.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and you can always make sure that you have these things free. This is free of cheese, or things being assembled, you know, doesn't have garlic. And if you don't repeat many things, you're not going to have big gaps for someone that has dietary issues.
Mm-hmm. Well, and gluten, nuts, alcohol, and wheat. Yeah, well, wheat, gluten allergies are very prevalent now, so you want to be very careful with those items.
One of those things, thinking about, I have a big party, a super silly but fun one for our one-year-old coming for her birthday, and we have a variety of people coming for this. And Del's mom growing up in Hawaii, the tradition for your first birthday is a luau. Mm-hmm. Which is something I'm not particularly familiar with, so I had to be taught about what the things were. And I can get a menu organized, and I can do food that I'm not that familiar with, and probably do a decent job with it. But the biggest thing to sort out is the variety of cousins that are vegetarians, and the one pescatarian here, and like, what is the dish, you know, what is the one hot dish for like 60 people that you can do that's going to deal with, and oh, by the way, there are two people that with celiac disease. So, I mean, you're going to end up making a huge arroz, Spanish-style rice with fall vegetables and Calabrian chilies that ends up having no dairy, no meat or seafood, no wheat, you know, so that we can at least get one hot dish out for everybody that's going to work.
Well, that's smart.
But you really have to think about
your family and your guests that are coming to your house. Exactly. And that's what you have to do.
The basic problem
is
that my daughter hates rice.
Hmm.
But she's not going to remember her first birthday party anyway. So this is her father being inconsiderate.
I'm just hoping that your daughter will put her hand in her birthday cake. I think that that would be the best part if she does that.
I guarantee that I'll be wearing some of it. I have a variety of sweaters that she's done a great job decorating with avocado and cupcakes and other terrific foodstuffs.
There you go. But all right. Well, I hope you have a nice luau. That should be cool. It should be a fun party.
I think it'll be interesting. I've never purchased grass skirts or coconut bras before, so... Besides seasoning food a little differently than I'm used to, it should be interesting. So besides luau's and you know crazy guest requirements and all that, it's not really crazy requirements.
No, it's not.
But it's stuff that you should think about if you want to be a successful host.
Mm-hmm.
What other things do you think? I mean, have you made a particular like error? Didn't consider something, and you're like, oh, I learned this lesson. Because that for me, that little party, I was like, ah, you're a knucklehead. You're cooking what you want to cook, and you're not cooking for the people that are coming.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's because you don't get to cook every day. So, of course, when you had the opportunity, you were excited to do it. So that's what happened probably for you. You know, I think in terms of I'm so used to cooking in a restaurant kitchen where I have absolutely everything I need. I have a dishwasher, which is a person. I hate doing dishes. And so for me, when I cook at home, the one thing I really don't like is that aspect of it. And then the other aspect is that I have to consider that I just don't have everything at my disposal at my house. I don't have all the equipment I'm used to. And that's one of the reasons when I designed my home kitchen that I tried to make it, you know, make myself happy.
A little more functional.
But it's still nothing like a restaurant kitchen, obviously. So there's no need for it to be.
So you got to be careful with your aspirations.
You do. I have to completely rethink the way that I am going to work. And oftentimes I do one pot dishes. I mean, that's just, you know, either
that's
that or I'm grilling. I mean, the one pot dishes, I've got rice made, I've got a starch, I've got a wonderful, some sort of stew, braised dish, something like that. And
you got to plan the number of hot things you're actually doing. You've got to plan
very well.
So when we come back on Foreman Wolf on Food and Wine, I'm going to ask you about menus, exactly how to get things done with just the one oven and one range.
Mm-hmm.
On Foreman Wolf on Food and Wine on Entertaining. ¶¶